I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and sports editor at the magazine The Nation, Dave Zirin. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, what's good? Welcome to the shop.
Hey.
Doing good, man.
Hey. Hey, man, so check this out. It's like Obama is kind of, he's trying to double down all this goodwill he's getting because he's down with this, he's doing a U.S. troop withdrawal down in Afghanistan. Now, President Obama took to the airwaves on Wednesday to say he's pulling 10,000 troops out by the end of the year and another 23,000 troops by the end of next summer. Wow. What do you guys think of that?
Arsalan, why don't you go first?
Well, you know, for anybody who has been following the war in Afghanistan, especially, you know, recent developments, we all remember his December 2009 speech at West Point, where he essentially doubled down on the troop levels that were currently there to increase it by 33,000. And essentially now what he's doing a year and a half later is saying, well, I'm taking that double down back now by next year. What's important, I think, for us as Americans is there are certain figures out that say that it costs about $1.2 million per soldier to keep a soldier in Afghanistan for 1 year. So a 10,000 troop drawdown would be $12 billion in savings that could obviously go better spent here on items. And, you know, it's nothing to sneeze at. And so, you know, sadly, he can't catch a political break either on the left or the right. I think that people are just going to, you know, take out their Haterade bottles and, you know, try to undermine him whatever he does.
Well, yeah, count me there, man. I'm sorry. You know, I'm something of a cynic. This may be of some shock to you, but I'm something of a cynic. You know, I'm certainly glad to see the men and women come home. I'm down with that, but I wonder if it's too early, and I hope the job is done, you know, or really close to done. And another thing I wonder about is, I mean, so the people that are playing cleanup, will they be safe? You know, I'm concerned about that. I don't know. I'm hoping the timing is kind of hinky. We got the elections coming up. Is that a coincidence? I don't know. Ruben, what do you think?
I think it's a lot more complicated. I think it's a lot more complicated than my friend Arsalan would like us to believe in terms of Haterade. I think it's really interesting and a very complicated issue because he's right that you have people on the left, Democrats in Congress, who are really upset with Obama. Most of the criticism he's gotten for this plan has come from the left, from Democrats who say 5,000 troops out this year isn't enough. They wanted 35,000 overall isn't enough in the next 2 years. They wanted 65,000 out. A lot of the criticism he's getting and has gotten over the last 2.5 years have been from Democrats in Congress, Howard Dean, the anti-war faction of the Democratic Party that used to love going after Bush because they hated Bush and they hated war, so it all worked together nicely. Now they're with Obama, they love Obama, but they hate war and their heads are about to explode. So it gets very, very interesting that way. But I gotta say, the Republicans are likewise blowing it because they're in a really tough spot, right? We're in a place where our politics is, if I'm running against Jimmy, anything he says, I just say the opposite. So basically the Republicans have been pulled into this dovish position. The elephant has gone dovish. The elephant's a dove. All of a sudden, all the Republicans are talking about being isolationists and pulling back and getting out of Afghanistan. And I gotta say, if you believe, like a lot of Americans, that it's too expensive to be in Afghanistan and we ought to come home, but at the same time, we still live in a dangerous world, do you really think I'm going to get Mitt Romney's going to protect me? Is Tim Paul Lente going to protect me? Is Rick Santorum going to protect me? No, no, no. Get ready because we're about to see a fascinating election where the guy who's the tough guy is Obama, who stands up and says, listen, my name is Barack Obama and I did Osama, okay? I protected you all. I took care of this business. And these guys over here on the far right, they want to pull out of the world. So it's going to get freaky. It's really, really interesting stuff.
Just to clarify, you know, Ron Christie was on the – Dave, we want to hear from you, obviously, but you're not a Republican. So at least we don't think so. But on the program
bet,
earlier –
Hey, I want to say I'm not a Republican either. I just play one on the radio.
Just play one on the radio. Yeah, we know.
Okay.
Better you than me. But saying that, but just Ron Christie earlier, though, giving the other position kind of the – who obviously worked for President George W. Bush and Vice President Cheney, giving the other side of that argument, you know, his argument was that this is not the time to pull out. The situation isn't resolved yet. So I guess Ruben, I'm just reinforcing your point that there are fractures on both sides of the aisle on this.
Absolutely.
So Dave, go ahead.
there are fractures on both sides, and I would argue it's overwhelmingly governed by political opportunism. I mean, you can go back to the Kosovo War and find speeches by Tom DeLay where he sounds like a peacenik just because Bill Clinton was pushing it. I think we have to push aside the political opportunism and ask ourselves the question, does a continued and prolonged U.S. occupation of Afghanistan, the graveyard of empires from Alexander the Great to the USSR, actually make you and me, Joe and Jane Sixpack, safer here in the United States? And does it actually make life better for people on the ground in Afghanistan? I stand with NBC reporter Richard Engel, who's been on the ground and has been making the talk show circuit, saying we got to not only pull out there now, but end this war on terror nonsense, because what it is propaganda taking the place of politics.
Can I just – one more point there. One of the things that I think contributes to the restiveness in this country is the sense that historical parallels are always dangerous, but the sense that Americans have that the Afghans aren't really pulling their weight in this and there are, in fact, some ways hostile to the United States. I just want to play the leadership I mean by that. A couple of weeks ago, Afghan President Hamid Karzai warned NATO that, quote, if it turns to the behavior of an occupation, of course the Afghan people know how to deal with that, sort of implying that, you know, we're taking the U.S. on. And then in response to that, here's a clip from departing U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, Carl Eikenberry, last week.
When Americans who are serving in your country at great cost in terms of our lives and treasures, when they hear themselves compared with occupiers, told that they are only here to advance their own narrow interest and likened to the brutal enemies of the Afghan people, my people, in turn, they're filled with confusion and they grow weary of our effort here.
Arsalan, final thought here?
Well, you know, everybody who knows anything about Afghanistan knows that Hamid Karzai is sort of known as the mayor of Kabul. Basically, his power extends to the city limits, and that's about it. I mean, Afghanistan is, you know, like Dave said, the graveyard of empires, and essentially you have fiefdoms. You know, you have the south and Helmand province, you have the north. You know, to go in there for over a decade and, you know, purport to, you know, create it into a Jeffersonian democracy is slightly Pollyannish. And so I do agree that, you know, Hamid Karzai has not been an honest broker or an honest partner. But again, I don't think that a prolonged occupation in Afghanistan is going to get them any closer to a Jeffersonian democracy.
Just to clarify for folks who may have missed it, the troops that are expected to be pulled out by the end of next summer, that's 33,000. Right. That's 33,000. Just want to clarify that. If you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly barbershop segment with author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and sports writer Dave Zirin. Now, here's a little something to set us up for our next topic.
Pants on the ground, pants on the ground, looking like a fool with your pants on the ground. Go in your mouth, head turned sideways, then hit the ground. Call yourself a cool cat. Pants on the ground, pants on the ground.
Who can forget General Larry Platt, who sang, if you can call it that, this song for the American Idol audition in 2010. It became a cultural hit. You decided to share that. Jimmy, back to you.
Thank you. Just as I was able to get back to sleep from having heard that song one time too many, yet it comes back.
You know you love it.
Thank you. Well, I guess it's kind of apropos, because last week, a young college student named Deshaun Marmon was kicked off a U.S. Airways flight for refusing to pull up his sagging pants. Now, the pants were reportedly hanging mid-thigh and revealing his underwear. Now, this week, photos surfaced of a man dressed in drag wearing either a bikini or a bra and panties or some such at the airport. Now, despite passenger complaints, he was able to fly. But the kid wasn't. The college kid wasn't. What's up with that?
That's underwear profiling, baby.
But you're leaving out one relevant detail, I think, which is that Deshaun Marmon, the University of New Mexico football player who was arrested, says that his hands were full and he couldn't pull up his pants because his hands were full, and then they arrested him rather than giving him an opportunity to comply. And he is African American, and the gentleman who was flying with his thigh-high stockings and his underwear and a little sweater was white.
Thank you for filling in the blanks, Michelle. I appreciate that. Ruben, lucky you, man. You're first in, dog. Go ahead. What do you think about this? The dress codes and the friendly skies, man.
Yeah. I think that when most people, I think, have understood this, at least since 9/11, if not before, that as a law professor once put it to me, You know, if you read the back of the ticket that you buy when you buy to fly, you know, you'd realize you'd be shocked at all the rights you've given away to the airlines. And the airlines have lots of different rights to discharge you off airplanes for lots of different reasons. And a lot of times they've done this, particularly after 9/11, in very unfair and egregious ways that have been unfair amounted to profiling and other things. And so I think that you have to look at this in this context. I think it's possible that these people overreacted on the ground. I don't know about, you know, my hands were full. I couldn't pull up my pants. I'm not sure that's all credible. How long were your pants down near your ankles?
Who cares
whatever.
That his pants were sagging? Yeah, what if he was wearing, if he was wearing a sarong or a skirt?
Exactly.
I don't know where that's coming from in terms of what they did on the ground. But I do know that airlines have a lot more power than most people realize in terms of policing the air, finding out who flies and who doesn't. And they sometimes abuse that power. This may be a case of that. This other case is weird, though. The guy who just showed up in women's underwear, like, as a protest, you know, and they let him on. I mean, that's disruptive in another way, but it's not, you know, I think the two are not really comparable. The other one about the guy in the women's underwear is just way too weird and way too off the wall to compare to anything.
Well, I think that, you know, this is Arsalan.
Go ahead, A-Train.
I do think that there is a double standard at play here, and I think that they can, you know, a parallel can be made. And the parallel that I would make is, you know, let's imagine that the guy in the women's panties was an African-American male, and let's say, you know, there was a white dude who had his pants down, you know, at thigh-high level. You know, would an African-American male in women's panties be allowed to fly? I don't know. You know, the jury.
No, man. Well, that would be a scandal. Well, that would be a scandal. I can't see that happening.
I mean, shut down the whole airport.
And serious?
You know, Ruben did make a good point in that, you know, after 9/11, you know, this is just a pattern of, you know, some egregious behavior by the airline. I mean, we've had, you know, cases where people who had, you know, Arabic writing on their T-shirts were kicked off planes or people wearing Muslim garb, you know, as our friend Juan Williams likes to say, who were kicked off summarily. You know, again, I think that there is, you know, certain double standards at play here. And, you know, I think that it's important for it to be called out when it happens.
Dave.
Well, I feel like I have to recuse myself from this discussion because currently I am not wearing pants.
Oh, no.
What
are you wearing? A tasteful sarong?
I'm so glad this is radio.
A tasteful sarong or?
This is NPR.
Tasteful sarong.
Thank God it's not television.
There's nothing wrong with sarongs, brothers. I rock a sarong when it gets hot. As I mentioned,
I wear a muumuu.
Dave, all right. So, Dave, why don't you tell us a little bit about the last night's NBA draft?
Good gracious, that NBA draft was something. Two of the stories that our people are talking about today is in the top of the first round, you had two Lithuanian guys, a Turkish guy, a Congolese guy, a Serbian guy, a Czech guy, a Latvian guy, a Croatian guy, and a lot of broadcasters who are looking at each other like, yeah, I don't know anything about him. Let's go to the video that looks like it was taken in a hostage situation and see if this person can actually play or not. And it actually, I know on good authority that it got so uncomfortable with a lot of the announcers just not knowing any of the players that one of the producers had to call into them and say, hey, ease on the xenophobia a little bit, guys, because it's getting a little too, who are these guys? Their names are funny to me, and I can't pronounce them. But despite all that, there's some really great stories there. The Morris twins, Markeef and Marcus Morris. Markeef. Identical twins, born 7 minutes before his brother, then drafted 7 minutes before his brother. And then the story of Jimmy Butler, homeless at 13, drafted by the Chicago Bulls, which is an amazing spot for him. It's the last pick in the first round, which is also great because that means there's guaranteed money. And Butler's insistence of saying, I do not want your pity. Because pity is the one thing. He says that every time he does an interview. Yeah, I was homeless. Yeah, it's been tough. But pity is the one thing I do not want. He's an amazing kid.
Arsalan, who do you like? Anything exciting?
Yeah, no, I mean, the Jimmy Butler story, obviously, you know, for someone from Chicago and, you know, going to Marquette, the kid story is amazing. You know, obviously, the Morris twins at 13 and 14 was great. What we, you know, there were a lot of whispers in pre-draft buzz, you know, about major, you know, blockbuster trades that could potentially happen. You know, Tony Parker might be leaving San Antonio Spurs. Steve Nash, is he going to, you know, be dealt? I think with the impending lockout and, you know, the labor talks that are going on, I think that it's going to affect a lot of free agency and blockbuster trades.
I need to understand. I'm sorry, forgive me for interrupting, but can I hear a little bit more about this potential lockout? So the NFL is locked out. Are you telling us, Dave, that the NBA may lock out too?
as of July 1st, yes. And there are huge gaps between the Players Association and David Stern, the NBA commissioner. They've been doing long meetings, like 9-10-hour-day meetings in New York this whole past week. There's a last meeting today. And if a deal isn't pounded out today, then you will most likely see a lockout July 1st. And that would mean no summer league, which will be terrible for the players. And these are some big-name players, too, who didn't even get drafted last night. Big-name players, Ben Hansborough, Scottie Hobson, who aren't going to have the summer leagues to be able to prove themselves going forward.
Ruben, I have a curveball for you. We only have about a minute and a half left.
Yeah.
You know that our dear friend Jimmy Israel has some big news this weekend.
Tell
me. He's about to tie the knot.
Oh.
And I thought in the minute that we have left, we want to wish him our very best. But I thought you, as our senior married man here, part of the crew, the barbershop crew.
Almost 10 years now.
We want to speak on behalf of your brethren.
Yes.
To offer him what? Best wishes?
Godspeed.
God bless you. No. I think it's great. And I think that you are, you know, marrying a wonderful woman, as we all know. And I think that this is great. And this is a start of another important chapter. But just always keep your priorities. You learn from other mistakes I've made, others have made, in terms of work takes over sometimes. But it's about family first. And stay focused on that, because that's the enduring thing, man. Jobs come and go, and opportunities come and go, and money comes and goes and all. But at the end of it, it's about family and about, you know, keeping it together and spending that quality time with folks. So,
and enjoy
happen,
yourself,
baby.
Because
Dave,
enjoy yourself. Just enjoy yourself, because the first marriage is always the best.
Oh, man. Arsalan, very quickly.
Was it my third or my fourth?
Listen, the last word in marriage, you can be right or you can be happy, but you can't be both. So mazel tov and Godspeed, Jimmy.
And Jimmy, you know my advice is, yes, everybody. Dear. Remember these words. Yes, dear.
That's right. You're right. I'm wrong.
Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book, The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the Washington Post Writers Group, Latino Magazine, and Pajamas Media. He was with us from San Diego. Dave Zirin is the sports editor for The Nation. He's also host of SiriusXM Radio's Edge of Sports Radio. He was with us from their studios in Washington, D.C. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, founder of themuslimguide.com, and managing editor of The Crescent Post. He was here in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much.
Peace.
Yep.
Take care.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday. Sure,